Grubbystock, Horowitz, Pirkei Avos, Perek Shlishi.
We did learn till now.
If we take notice, you know, we learn every Mishnah, we usually forget, you know, the big picture. The big picture was that we began the service of Avos with Moshe Rabbeinu. We continued after Moshe Rabbeinu, we went on over all the generations. It was all the time of the Zugot. The last one was Hillel, Shmaya Raftali on Hillel HaZaken. Then we went on to Rabbi generations of Hillel, the Nesiim of Hillel. Yeah, Rabbi Gamliel and Shimon ben Gamliel and two Rebbe, we ended in Rebbe. That was the first Perek. That was like the big picture. Moshe Rabbeinu to Rebbe. Second Perek, we went a bit with Rebbe, then we went back to Hillel, and then we went through another chain, not the chain of the Nesi'im to Rebbe, but the chain of the Avot Bezin, of those of the big teachers of Torah. Yeah, that was after Hillel. We had Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, we had all the five, until we ended here. So we had like Moshe Rabbeinu, then Rebbe, and then Hillel to Rebbe, and then Hillel, till I would say the last one was Rabbi Eliezer. Now we're beginning a new period. And this new period begins with a name of a Tana. I don't think you've ever learned anything. I don't know if you've heard about him or learned anything of him. It's called Akavya ben Mahalel. Have you heard about Akavya ben Mahalel? Have you heard about him?
If I have, I have forgotten.
Yeah.
Or at least I don't recognize the name.
You don't recognize the name?
First of all, in every Levaya, they read this Mishnah. So it's a very famous Mishnah. Akavya ben Mahalel, but usually they say it quick. It was a nigun. Akavya ben Mahalel, it's this Mishnah. Every Levaya, this Mishnah is said. So it's a very famous mission. So I think the name, but usually it's difficult to, you know, to concentrate in the Levi, hear what he's saying, the one who's taking the mitah, yeah? But this is the mission, Akavya ben Mahalel. So usually with this here, this, you know, flops over our conscience, we don't even listen to it. But this is the Akavya ben Mahalel. But let me ask you a question. His name is Akavya. His father is Mahalel, but his name is Akavya. So if his name is Akavya, what do you think, which generation are we talking about? What do you think? Did you notice anything strange in the name?
Well, it didn't sound like, well, it sounded a bit like Akiva, but it didn't sound like...
Okay, the name is okay.
Yeah.
Same name, Akavya. It's the same, probably the same root as Yishorosh, as Akiva, as Yaakov. It's probably the same. Akiva, Yaakov, the old... You know, Jewish names, the Hebrew names, are always a combination between the theophic part, usually it's Ka, Kel, or any names of God, and the root of a certain name. So here you have Yud, and then Akev, and it could be the Yud, could be in the beginning, could be in the end. It's like you have...
But even his father's name is not Ephraim,
well, yeah, but I mean... Okay, it's not common, but it's a Hebrew name, you know, it's used from two parts, Hillel and El.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like every Jewish Hebrew name, yeah? Like Eli, like a name, let's say a common name, Hebrew very common
Yecheskel
name, would be Yecheskel. Yecheskel is strong,
right.
El, and the name of God, Kel, yeah? That's Yecheskel. You have many, Yisrael, Yashar, El, was God. Many, or Eli Melech, that's God and Melech. It could be also the opposite, Melech El, the Eli Melech. Same idea, yeah? So Mahalel, Akavya is the same idea. I mean, the name itself, it is a rare name, but it's a basic. Hebrew would say Hebrew common, would be Hebrew common name of choosing it. Okay, but there's something strange. What's strange?
Just about the name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sorry. Can you please repeat it, or if I can?
Akavya.
Akavya. Just the name itself.
doesn't sound Jewish.
It's very Jewish.
Yeah.
It's very Hebrew. Akav, yeah. Yeah, why not?
Uh-huh.
Yaakov, it's the same thing. It's like Yaakov, it's the opposite.
Uh-huh.
Instead of Yud, and then Akav hits Akav.
Yeah.
What's strange? I mean, maybe not very strange, but still.
Can,
no.
Just with the name itself.
No, I mean, as long as we learned before, you know, we had Rabbi Yochanan, Ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yaki, we had Rabbi Elias, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Les,
yeah.
And here we come to Akavya. Where's the Rebbe gone?
Yeah.
Oh. Where's the Rebbe? From this you can learn.
That's coming from after.
That's from an early generation when you didn't have yet the Rebbes yet. It was so great, you didn't, like Hillel. It's not called Rabbi Hillel.
Before the rabbis, you're saying?
It's
Akav is before.
Akav is an early generation before they added Rabbi.
The
I mean, did Eliyahu and Abi called Rabbi Eliyahu? No. Yishayahu? No.
But I thought it was Rabbi, then it went to Rav afterwards.
What?
Yeah,
it was
Rabbi,
then Rav. Yeah, it was Rabbi in Eretz, Rav in Bavel. But they added the name Rabbi, or Rabban.
Uh-huh.
But how was Hillel called? Hillel, how was Shammai called? Shammai.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go earlier generation. Antignus. What was his name? Antignus. Not Rabbi Antignus. Because
mm-hmm.
they're so great, you didn't need to add the name Rabbi. So in the early generations, the Jesuits, yeah, they were all called Rabbi. No Rabbi. Shimon ben Shatach. That's how it's called. Not Rabbi Shimon ben Shatach. Shimon ben Shatach. No Rabbi. So if it's called Akavya, it means that he's from an early generation, or was very, very great, or could be early or very, very great. His name was Akavya. And the truth is...
He's saying right after the first Beit HaMikdash.
The truth is that he's in the time, it's the early time of the first Beit HaMikdash. Still the early times of the first Beit HaMikdash. And his name was Akavya. That was his name. They didn't add a Rebbe. And he was in the time of Hillel and Shammai. He was in the time of Hillel and Shammai. Now, it says about Hillel, it says in the Gemara, Akavya ben Mahalalel was very great. And he was so great that really they wanted him to be Nasi. I mean, Av Beis Din. Yeah, as we remember, the time of the Zugot, the times of Hillel v'Shammai, yeah, that was the time. It's called Zugot, couple. You always had a couple. You had a couple. It was before the Tanaim. You had a couple. You had one was a Nasi, the political leader, still a great man, and the other one's the Av Beis Din, the head of the Beis Din. And you had it two. First one was Yoisi and Yoisi, times of the Hashmonites. Then it went on. You had Antignus, you had Shmaya Vaftalion, the famous, you know, who was Shmaya Vaftalion war, you know? Shmaya Vaftalion, they were converts.
Yeah.
Converts. Yeah. They were descended from Sancheiv, king of Vashur. Vashur.
Exiled. Yeah.
What?
Right, who had exiled.
Yeah, there's a famous story that once they went to the Beis HaMikdash, that was time of the Beis HaMikdash, so they walked. Was probably Yom Kippur. They were walking. They were walking from the Beis Medrash where they studied or prayed. Same time, the high priest came out of the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
And everyone, the whole of the Jewish people, were all after him because it's so great. They were all after him, walking after him. And in the middle of the way, Shmaya Naftalion crossed the road. Everyone left. Everyone left the high priest and went to Shmaya Naftalion. And everyone went to him, and then they met. So the high priest was very, you know, very upset. So they said, they met him, said, Baruch Haba, welcome the high priest. So he said, we don't say welcome to someone who's descended from Gentiles. So he said, so they said, they answered, he insulted them because of where they came from. So he said, well, we welcome the high priest that behaves, that is the son of Aaron the Great, that behaves like Aaron Akoyan the Great, and is peaceful, and that's someone who does not behave like Aaron the Great. That's what they told him. And the Mishnah says about it, from where we learn that Torah, learning Torah gives you, it's more important, and it gives you, it brings you in a higher level,
yeah,
than even if you, more than the Kohen Gadol. Like, who's the highest, you know, when we talk about Yichus, yeah, talk, where we descended from, yeah, what's the highest Yichus? The high priest. Yeah, what's the most important family in the between the Jewish people, the most important tribe? Levi. And what's the most important part of this tribe? The Kohanim. And who's the most important in the Kohanim, between the Kohanim? The high priest, yeah? And still, Shema and Aftarion descended from I don't know who, from Sancheriv, more important than the him. And this, that's what the Mishnah learns from. So that's the time Shmaya Raftal. Shmaya Raftalion, they were the rabbis of Hillel. If I'm sure you know this, you know the story that Hillel, when he came from Bavel, from Babylon, and he came to Jerusalem and wanted to study, was very poor. So he wanted to study by Shmaya Raftalion's yeshiva. He needed to pay. It's not like today everything is anything. The government pays you. You know, he needs to pay. So he used to pay, but one day he couldn't. So he climbed on the roof.
No.
Yeah, you know the story. He climbed on the roof and listened. And the snow fell on him. And it was worth it, because in the end he was the Nasi. Yeah? After Shemayel Aftan, he was the Nasi. Now, who is that based in? We know Shammai. But the truth is, Akavim b'Mahalel was meant to be one. Now let's see, there's a Mishnah, we'll learn it, a Mishnah in Eduyot. It's got to do with this Mishnah. So let's see it, read it together, and then we'll see that.
How much can you learn lying on a roof?
What?
How much can you learn lying on a roof?
Good question. He did lose his conscience. That's what the Mishnah, he did after a while, he lost his conscience. Yeah. Yeah, and they found him there.
You have to imagine, yeah, his level there.
Mm-hmm.
He was learning very deeply.
Yeah, he was listening, you know. Maybe one word of Torah was enough for him.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, but just the fact that
he's
he did
great
it,
people.
That he would put himself
right
in that situation.
So this is a Mishnah. So let's see what the Mishnah says. Let's see, because I think we have a translation here. Mishnah 6. Mishnah Zav. Akavya ben Mehalel. That's what it says about Akavi ben Mahalel. Akavi ben Mahalel was a great Tana, a very great Tana, and he was one of the great Talmidim of the earlier generations. So Akavi ben Mahalel, that was considered one of the greatest Tanaic sages, and one of the great Tanaim that received the Torah from the earlier generations. He used to say four things. Now, usually, whoever was to say, they used to agree. But in these four things he said, in these four things he taught, not most of the sages agreed with him. So it says like this. Akavya ben Mahalel he'id arba dvarim. Akavya.
How come here it says Shiloh?
No, I'm reading Eduyot.
Oh, okay.
It's not, then we'll see the Mishnah. First, we'll,
okay.
This is like, I would say, it will explain the later Mishnah. Yeah. He taught four things, four matters. And they told him, please, Akiva, You should agree with what we say and resign your position and your the halacha you're trying to teach. And if you're going to do it, we're going to make you an asi, an av bezim. We're going to make you an av bezim, the chief of the court of the Jewish people. He said, I'm not going to resign from what I say. Yeah. Why? Because I mutav lehikare shote kol yamai. I prefer to be called a fool, an idiot, all of my life for rejection my position, and not to be called one day a Russian. People will say, you know, really, the reason I changed my mind is because I wanted a position. That's what they're going to say. So I'm not going to change what I teach. This is why I taught. This is why. This is my opinion, and I'm not going to change my opinion. What are these four things? We're not going to go too much into it. There are four things. One of them is, and that's interesting. He said like this. Chachamim said like this. He said this. Chachamim said like one of the interesting subject. We know there's a halacha of a sota. What's the halacha of a sota? If someone suspects his wife was, so he can go to the temple and they give her to drink certain water mixed in the parsha of sota. Yeah, she drinks it. She drinks it, and then there's a miracle. If she sinned, then she dies. If not, she goes on living. The question is, what happens with a giyoret, with a convert? Did we give her to drink sota? Did we do a sota or not? What do you say?
Why? She married.
She married. It's a giyoret. She converted.
So then she's no different than another person.
That's probably what the chachamim say. No difference. Said why not? But Akavah ben Malal said no. I learned from the earlier generations, the chachamim, and they taught me that this idea of sota is very, very special. It's a ness, it's a miracle. And it could happen only for for a woman that is descended from the Jewish people, that is born Jewish. If she's not born Jewish, it won't work. Because she has to be a very, very high madrigal in order to work. It's a miracle.
It can't be a new neshama, you say.
That's what the Chachamim say, yes.
It doesn't mean it. It means it's a summer.
Right.
Well, it's a new summer.
Yes.
She had none before.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Correct? Or it was a miracle either way, because either a miraculous death
or
miraculously has children.
Yeah, right. She has children, right. Good, yeah.
Right. You put it that way.
So, Akavah says, that's what I heard from my rabbis, the early generation. They said no. So they told him, well, you know, we have here someone stood up and said, well, do you remember Shema Naftalion that used to teach, was our rabbis a generation before? Well, there was a story that came a Gioris, came a converter to the Beis Medrash, and they asked Shema Naftalion if she should send it to the Beis and drink or not, and they said yes, she should, and they did it. So why do you say not? So Akavah ben Malal says, well, they were converters, so they didn't want to put a shame. They were a bit more, you know, they were a bit more sensitive to the issue. So they said, well, let's send them. But it wouldn't really mean that it would work, because it won't. It's just, you know, in order to, you know, let them feel, just don't feel bad, you know, just feel part of it, that they everyone, like they are as everyone else. That's the idea. But not really. It didn't really work. And they were gay.
Does anybody ever feel bad from drinking water?
The Gemara says that yes, it used to happen. Yeah, used to happen. Yeah. So they heard that. The sages heard. The Chachamim heard that. So they said, "Well, say such a thing." They excommunicated him. Like they did to Rabbi Eliezer. Yeah, they did. Put him in the nidui. That's what they did. And the Gemara says, well, Chas v'sholem, it happened to someone as great as Akavah ben Mahalel. Rabbi Yehuda says, you know, that there's no one in the whole of the Jewish people, someone who is great in his wisdom and his Yirat Chet and his Yerushalayim. No one is great as a Akavah ben Mahalel. So how could they do it? Yeah, but they did it. Even for him. Why? Because the most of the sages said, and that was the Rabbim, yeah? The majority said that you do send the Giyos. He said they don't, and he did not agree to change his position. So they put him in Nidui. It's like a halacha of Zoken Mamre. It's a halacha of Zoken Mamre. It's written in Dvor, in the Chumash. If most of the Bezin say certain halacha, and comes one of the Bezin who teaches differently, and does not agree to teach, to change it. He's not agreed to change it, to change his position. He's called as a Ken Mamre, and they stone him. That's what's in the halacha, you stone him. Because you have one halacha, you have a Bezin who decides what you should do, and if one Zaken, I mean, you can always say, you know.
So why did this happen last time?
Well, I would say you can always say, well, my personally own position, I don't understand it. But still, this is halacha, so what can do? This is what I'm going to teach. Yeah. You can always say, you don't need to change your mind. You don't need to teach differently, but you do need to change the practical halacha. If most of the chachamim say something is osa, and someone asks you to say, you have to say osa. Even if your position is different, you can always say, you know, I learned the sugya differently. I hear different. I go a different masorah. Yeah. But this is what most of the chachamim say. So I'm going to tell you, you have to do what everyone says. And you know, it happens even today. You know, sometimes you go to some great poiskim, ask a question, and sometimes they answer. Like ask some rabbi in Baibega, and he says, look, my personal position, I don't really understand it. But you know, the halacha is, and the Mishnah Berurah says like this. So if the Mishnah Berurah says like this, this is what you have to do. You know, think what you're here. So they say. Because that's the beauty of the halacha. The halacha, we know there's always the idea of Eilu ve'Eilu de v'Elokim Chaim. It's all the words of God. All of it. All the ideas. Even Shammai. That we don't do anything with Shammai says, it's the words of God. It's v'Elokim Chaim. But as a practical halacha, practical way of life, you can only choose one. What can you do? You can only choose one way. You can't do many ways. There are many ways that Jewish people just break into pieces. You have one way. That's it. So you do Hillel, and that's it. You do Hillel. And then you do Shammai, don't stone him. That's it. That's why the Rambam says that when it's argument, when we have arguments, we have many agadic arguments with agadatot, you know, like questions of, you know, what's the better way to do, what's the better idea, how is it going to be with Mashiach, what's going to be, questions like this, it's more questions of ideas and beliefs, written in the Mishnah, the Gemara, in the sages, you have many, many ideas, all of them are true, and there's no point of saying he's right and he's not right, they're all right. When it comes to the question, well, how you should behave, halacha, then you have one way. The question of ideas, all the ideas are true. As long as it's part of the Torah, all true. The ideas of Shammai are true. But practical halacha is one way. That's it. So that's what they told him. They told him, well, that's the halacha of Zaken Mamre. Well, they didn't stone him, but they did excommunicate him. That they did do. And when he died, what did they do? Put a stone on his
grave.
On his grave, yeah. The stone was like, in certain way, it was like stoning him.
And what about the name again? When they put him in Tichem, did they do the same thing?
They did put him in Tichem, that's it?
No, I'm saying.
With leather?
Yeah.
They also put him in Tichem.
And put a stone there?
No, because you remember the story was? In the end, before he died, they sent Rabbi Akiva and they took away the Cherem. They took it away.
Uh-huh.
For certain reasons, they took it away. Maybe because he stopped teaching his ways, so they said, well, okay.
He teaches ways, he's okay.
Yeah. Took the Cherem. But he was still there. Now, it was, and he died. That's what it says. Omed ben Yiduya. It's written, he died in his excommunication. That's with it.
Now, that's why you don't hear about him then.
Maybe that's the reason you don't hear a lot about him, yeah.
What did he write?
He taught in four things, in four subjects written here, differently than most of the Chachamim. One of these subjects was the question of if a Giyoyos could be a Soitomot. That was one of the questions. And then he like in Sorti or some ways about Shmaya Naftali. Yeah, he said they taught differently because they themselves were converted. So they put him in the needle. Now the Gemara says, contingent says, when he died, a few minutes before he died, and you know, in his bed, his son came to visit him. So you know what he told his son? He told his son before his death, "My son, you should retract from the positions I taught. Yes. Don't teach the same as I taught. You change it. Change. You teach as the Chachamim, not as I taught you."
You so she's saying they were right at the end?
Ah, good question. So his Rebbe, so his son said, "Well, if that's so, if you tell me to change my opinion and teach differently, then why don't you do it? You do it. You correct it. You go on and say you should retract yourself. You should change your teachings. You should go out and say I was wrong, or maybe I even was wrong. I'm teaching differently. That's what most of the Chachamim say. I'm teaching differently. You change it. Why should I do it? You do it. And if you do, they'll take away the nidui. They won't pour stone on your grave. Do it." So Akavi says, "Well, I have a problem." He said, "I have a problem. What's my problem?" He says, "Look. Ani shamati mipi ha-merubim, v'hem shamu mipi ha-merubim. The situation is, my son, I heard these rulings and these halachot I taught from the majority of the sages of the earlier generations. My rabbis, most of my rabbis, that's what they taught me. And they maybe also heard it from a majority. They heard maybe differently. I don't know why and how, but they did probably. So I heard the halakha from the majority, and they heard the halakha from the majority. I can't change it. I can't change my mind. I can't change it. But you heard from me, from your father. I'm alone. But what does what do you hear the majority of the sages say?
The opposite.
Differently, opposite. Then you should go according to what they say, not according to what I say.
Because he's going according to the older times.
Yes. I can't do it, the majority, that's what they taught me. So what can I do? I can't change it. But you, I'm your father, you should honor your father. But still, the halakha says, that's what's written in the halacha. You have to go according to the majority. So if you hear from the majority of the sages that they said a certain halacha, you must go according to what they say, not according to what I say. That's the halacha.
Does he hear it from?
Because he did hear it from the majority of the sages. The majority of his teachers in the earlier generation
felt that way.
Taught him the way he taught. They taught him that a converter, a giyoret, does not enter the proceed of a sota. That's what they taught him.
Until
so
what?
We can't change it.
Sota.
It's certain halakha. If there's certain halakha. There was a machloket about it. If it's relevant or not relevant to a woman that converted. So the other argument. What can I hear that way? And you heard differently. They heard differently. So we can argue. You know? They hear them, and I hear them, George. We can argue. But you can't choose. Because you hear me, your father, as one. And you hear majority. You hear the majority that teaches differently. So you have to go. That's not by con. Meaning, so if we understand deeply what he was trying to say, yeah, we do know the halakha says in the Torah that I have to go according to the majority. Yeah? Right? And if not, you're Zaken Mamre. Well, he said, his idea was, if I hear from the majority, I need to go according to the majority and teach according to the majority. That's also I need to teach.
That's what
I'm not Zaken Mamre.
Lying,
yes, and I'm not Zaken Mamre. I'm right, because that's the way I should do it. And even if they excommunicated him, and even they said maybe it's a Zaken Mamre and maybe it's Chayef Skila, he should be stoned. But he said, no, it's not true. I hear the majority, I have to do what the majority says. Even if you stone me, I have to do what
I hate, what the, I hate from the majority. Though you are now the majority, but I hate it from the majority. That's enough. But when it comes to someone who comes and asks a question, then he has to teach differently. He has to say, well, you listen to them, don't listen to me.
Why couldn't they accept what he said? That he got it from the majority.
Because they got it from a different majority. And they said, well, we are now the majority, you have to change your mind. You have to change it.
He doesn't have to change his mind. He's obliged to stick to what he heard.
They say, according to what they say, well, you can still go on saying that way, but if someone asks you what the right thing to do, you should go according to our way. And this is what happened in the end of his life.
Are they right about that?
In the end, we see that they're right. Because even here,
it's like coercion.
We can see that in the end.
That's why he said it to his son.
In his last minutes, he did agree. And that's why he talked to his son.
He didn't agree according to the halacha.
Yes.
He agreed that I have to go according. You have to go according to them.
Exactly.
Because I learned halacha from the other rabbi.
Right. But
so
you
I can't change my mind. But you have to because you're in that generation.
And that's what we see. That's what
he did. He did have to change his mind.
Yes.
He didn't.
No, he didn't. No. You're both right. You were saying about his idea, and you were talking about the practical way someone else should do, what he should teach others to do. Yeah? And you were saying, well, what he should...
What are you supposed to teach others?
So
at the end, he got it.
In the end, he got it.
I should have listened to the disciples.
In the end, he got it, yeah. I should teach others, like he taught his son. He told his son, well, you, my son, you should go on what they say. And that was, maybe we should have done it in the beginning. Not only to his son, to everyone. Say, everyone, well, this is what all need to go on to what they say.
Did the guy, the old man, hear it from the Sanhedrin of his time?
Yes, exactly.
But the previous generation's greater.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So then why is he obligated to tell him to not go that way?
So you're right. In the end, you're right. When his son came to, when his son came to ask him, how should I teach? And how should I behave? He agreed he should do according to
that generation.
You're right. And that you can see it in this story.
He didn't add that I should have done the same.
What?
He didn't add, and I should have done the same as you're going to do.
No, because he said, well, I personally, and that should
so
be...
So he didn't reject.
No, but, he's willing to have to stop.
Well, he points out here a certain, I would say, a delicate point. He says, well, okay, let's put it this way. Now we're not talking about teachings. We're talking about practical behavior, yeah? Now we all agree, in the end, that's a practical behavior, yeah? Others should not listen to him. And even if you come and ask him, he should say, well, you shouldn't listen to me. Right? We all agree now about it, and that's also what he did. We all agree about it. Even if I have my own opinion, but if you come to ask me a question, you should tell me, even if I'm Rav Avadia Yosef, but the majority says differently, even Rav Avadia Yosef should tell his students and his sons and his family, you should go according to what they say. Because this generation of Sanhedrin says differently, and we have to behave according to this generation. Yeah? That's what we all agree on. But what you point out is an interesting question, a very delicate, interesting question. The question is, what do you, Rabbi Akavya, what do you do for yourself in your own world? You don't tell it, but what do you do?
Yes, should you go to them? Not to this generation, to the last that we learned from.
To according to what he learned.
Right.
Well, this is a good question. Complicated question.
That's why he was willing to have that stone put on it. So.
Yeah. Maybe this was the difference. But maybe the truth is that even for yourself you need to do what the majority says. Could be. It's an interesting sugya. It deserves a shiur of its own. Because we all agree, and it's brought in the halacha, that you always do according to the majority, according to the standard of our generation. But what do you do for your own when you're not teaching anyone? No one even sees, no one even looks, no one even knows.
It doesn't matter.
Should you do according to what the Beis Din says, or you should do according to what your Beis Din earlier generation taught you?
Earlier generation, of course.
Maybe. Not sure.
He doesn't have the right to teach, to tell other people, but he has to keep that way that he was taught.
So we're not sure about it. And there's a story about it in the Mishnah. Maybe tomorrow we'll study it, because it's an interesting question.
Was there another Sanhedrin established by this time?
This time? Now we're talking about the earliest time when you had a Sanhedrin, yeah. You had every generation.
No, like currently, like when they're having the discussion,
yeah.
There was a Sanhedrin.
Yes. Yeah. They did have a Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin argued with him differently.
But he went from the older.
But he was part of an earlier generation,
well,
the earlier Sanhedrin.
So no, I changed my mind. No, he was wrong.
Why?
Because they already. When you have an established,
when you have a new Sanhedrin, you go according to the new Sanhedrin.
That's right. So if the one was already, if they had a new one established, and he's still doing it the old way, he was wrong.
So again, you're right.
But he's trying to prove.
Because he shouldn't have done what the earlier generation said. But the question is not what he should teach. The question is what he should do for himself. Now the difference. Meaning, if someone comes and asks you a question, he always has to be the one who says, well, we do according to the Beis Din today. Yeah, I maybe differently think differently, but we have to do what the majority says, and that's it. But that's for sure, and that's the conclusion here. No doubt. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. You do. Everyone should do according to the current Sanhedrin. And even if you argue, it's meaningless. It's meaningless. You have to teach what the Sanhedrin says today. The question is what you do personally, and that's another question. So that maybe we'll leave out for now. Anyway, the story goes on. Okay, it's clear the difference. It's a delicate difference. Yeah, it's important. So anyway, what continue happened there is that. So that's what he told his again. He told his fathers. He told his son. Well, you should do what the sages say. The majority says this. I would say the current Sanhedrin say. Because what they say is what you have to listen to. Because they're the majority of today. They're the Sanhedrin of today. I said, okay. So then he said, well, Father, Dad, well, I know they excommunicated you and so on. But I'm sure you have still a strong influence on your friends, right? So maybe tell your friends, we're not going to anyone to help me here anymore, and I'm young and I need help. Please ask your friends, please, to accept me. They should be friendly to me. Please. So he said, I'm not going to ask him to do it. No. So he says, why? Did you find anything wrong about me? That you don't want to ask your friends, to help me? Maybe give me a letter, I'm a Kaveh b'Mahalel, please help my son. If he needs anything, please be nice to him, please teach him Torah. Why not? Give me a letter. A Kaveh b'Mahalel, the greatest, as it says in the Gemara, the greatest chokhmah. There's no one greater than chokhmah Yerushalayim. Great in wisdom and great in Yerushalayim. Give me a letter, please. He says, no. He says, why? Ma'asecha, it's a very famous saying, but no one knows that. It comes from here. Ma'asecha yekarvucha u'ma'asecha yerachkucha. Your deeds will bring you close to the sages, or your deeds will distance you from the sages. It depends on you, what you do. My letters won't help, my recommendations won't help. If you will be good behaved, and if you will do the proper deeds, then they'll be close to you. They'll help you. If you have wrong deeds, then you keep distance. It depends on you. It doesn't depend on me. This is a very famous saying. Masecha yekarvucha, masecha yechkucha. Don't try and look, what he did. Get help from him, get help from others. Get protection, protect, as we say.
Don't try and use, you know. It all depends on what you do.
Why did the son think he would need a letter?
What? Why did the son think? Was he young? No one knew who he was because he was with his father.
No, he said his name.
Yeah. But you know, there's a difference if Akavit writes, you know, who was then? Hillel, yeah? He writes to Hillel. Hillel, this is my son. Please, you know, I was excommunicated and so on and so on, but still don't forget, your good friend. Please help my son. I'll be very grateful for it. Who wouldn't do from that letter? Everyone would, right? Who wouldn't? All the great sages, you had times of Hillel and the great Chacham Yisrael in those times. It would help him, why not?
Why do you think he needs help?
He himself, the son's fault he needs. But
why do you think he needs help?
Because he was young and he was lonely. He was living with his father. So this would, you know, like open doors for him. It's a big difference between that. It's not only today it works, you know, connections, protection. Four times he says, no, you should do whatever you do, that will help you.
So wait, so the father wouldn't write the letter?
No.
Did he give a reason why?
Yes. He says that you should depend on yourself. No letters from fathers.
Build up your own
connections. Yeah, we're talking here we're talking about the great sages. Yeah, we're not talking about, you know, going into business or opening a shop of diamonds. Then maybe you need a recommendation. We're talking about the Chacham Yisrael, the learned Torah. That's what he wanted for.
So you didn't want him to even mention his name.
Yeah, don't mention my name even. You should go see if you. Yeah. See if you are, you know.
Build your own name.
Yeah, if you good Talmud, a good student, go in the basic measures. So show what you're worth. It show that you want to study. You have motivation. You want to study. It depends on you.
Yeah,
I can understand.
That's, you can understand it, right?
100%.
Yeah.
My son did it with his son. He didn't let them know the yeshiva that he sends his kids to.
Uh huh.
Once they hear that it's his yeshiva, they take them in automatically.
Uh-huh.
His son, he applied to it without, he didn't want it to say who he was on purpose. So he built up his own name in the yeshiva.
Very good. Very good. And that's how you build yourself.
And then one day he just walked in after almost a whole year.
Uh-huh.
And they were shocked that it was his son.
Wow.
They never put two and two together.
And you know what? Probably the reason he was so successful is because he was all by his own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he gave him the inside drive to do it. If he relies on the father, relies on his family, relies on letters and so on, so he comes in, you know, like a king and doesn't put the effort in it, in studying. But that way he has to show himself. He has to show what he's worth. Then he builds himself. And that's the idea. Yeah. So as we can see here, Akavya ben Mahalel, again, he was, as we know, he's such a great, one of the greatest sages in his time. The greatest, I mean. It's written in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, it's interesting how the Mishnah puts it. The Mishnah says, En ha'azaran in Elet, the temple, when it used to get full, everyone used to come and Pesach, or everyone used to come and Sukkot. Everyone used to come to visit the temple when it got full. And usually the first, the elder people used to come in first, and then all the rest. Then when we used to get too much full, they used to close the doors. So what he says, Rabbi, he says, En ha'azaran in Elet, the doors of the Temple Mount, of the Azara, of the court of the temple did not close b'fnei kol adam b'Yisrael that was as great as Akavya in wisdom and Yerushalayim. It was so great. No, that was the greatest of the greatest came in the court of the temple, and there is no one greater than him in wisdom and Yerushalayim, both. He was not only a great tzaddik, he was a great mind, both of them. And he was so great that we see how he had his opinion and had what he taught. He didn't change his mind, not even they offered him to be an Asi. It could have been, you know, if it would be an Asi, we wouldn't hear any more about Hillel Shammai. We would never hear about Hillel Shammai. You won't have this couple, Hillel and Shammai, we always say together. You would hear Hillel and Akavia. That should have been the two names, Hillel and Akavia. He was meant to be the Nasi. He was greater than all. He was greater even than Hillel, as it says. Not I'm saying it. The Mishnah says he was greater than Hillel. So you would hear in the Mishnah, Hillel and Akavia, you'd hear all what he used to do. But he didn't want to change his mind, so he didn't become a Nasi, a Beis Din. And not only didn't become a Beis Din, they even excommunicated him. And he died lonely, alone, and put a stone on his toe.
Why'd they do that to him?
What?
Why'd they do it to him?
Because he was supposed to be stoned.
He was supposed to be stoned.
Why?
Because, as I explained before, there's a halakha.
I'm sorry, I was late.
Yeah, it's okay. It's written in the Torah, Parshas Devarim, that in the Sanhedrin, yeah, when there's a majority, the majority decides something. Everyone and one needs to teach the practical teaching according to the majority. Now, what if all the Sanhedrin teaches one way? All the majority decides one way. And one says, well, I think differently. And he goes out and teaches differently. I mean, the Sanhedrin say, let's say, I would say, for example, the Sanhedrin, there's like an argument if a certain object is mokta or not mokta. Okay, simple thing. And they all decide it's mokta. You're not allowed to move it on Shabbos. And he says it's not. And they all teach it is. And he goes and teaches it's not. And he doesn't change his teachings. It's called the Zaken Mami. The elder Zaken, one of the Beis Din, that his rebellion. Elder rebellion, Zaken Mami. And what they do is they warn him, you shouldn't teach different than the majority of the Beis Din. You should write your own book of halakhot. You have one book of law, don't change it. Go write a different one. But we have one way. And if he does not agree and doesn't change it, they stone him. Now in this generation, I don't know, Akavi ben Mahalel, they won't kill him. One generation where they could kill. Maybe earlier they would put him to court, and if he won't change it, they would kill him. In this generation, I don't know if they could do it. I mean, the Romans were ruling already the country. It was Roman times, Roman Empire. Wasn't it? I don't know if they would kill him. But they did. After that, when he died, they put a stone on his tomb to remind you, he shouldn't be stoned.
So we put stones on people's graves today anyway.
No, that's something different.
That's differently.
What is that?
The difference is, the reason they do it today, well, first of all, just to be exact, they put the stone not on the tomb itself. I mean, not on the matzvah, I would say. You know what I say, matzvah in English?
The tombstone?
Not on the tombstone. They put a stone on the tombstone. They put it on his...
But they had it, right?
What?
So they had it.
Yeah, no, but they put it on the...
On the casket itself.
Yeah, on the casket itself. So where it was lying.
So nobody sees it then.
Well, then they didn't so much have they didn't have like a stone head. Yeah, people would see it. People would see it. Whoever came and buried him, they put a stone there. Everyone could see it. Then they used to also bury in caves. Yeah,
right, like San Andreas.
Yeah, and they used to come in the cave and see. So everyone would see. They put it in there. Stone. But it's not on the. Not it's not on the matzvah, it's not on the tombstone. Not on the what we do is we put it on the tombstone. And the reason we put it on the tombstone is in some way it's we're going back to the way of burying in the early times. when they used to put a stone, you know, it was a stone, just a simple stone, not like, you know, today, you know, it's put like something that is a marble, a square, beautiful marble, just put a big stone on. And then everyone who came put another stone. That's what they used to do it. Put they used to put on top of the tombs, they used to put, you know, this pile of stones. No, there was usually wasn't even a name then. It's a pile of stone. So when you come today to a matzvah and put a stone on it, it means you adding. You're also putting a tombstone. And you know how I learned it? How did I get there? How did I understand it? Because I visited Yemen years ago.
Went to Yemen?
Yeah.
Well, how did you get
a few years ago?
How did you do that?
Oh,
it's like super illegal
story.
For you to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I went to visit Yemen.
No. Like your passport is blocked. You can't go there. So how did you get there?
Old story. So later will be. If I have time, we'll talk about it. I want to say the idea. I went to Yemen. Now there was this great rabbi, very famous rabbi called Rabbi Shalom Shabezi. The great Yemenite rabbi. I went to his tomb and they took me to there. And he had this big field of kvorim, of Jewish kvorim. And why? I didn't see any matzevot as today. No tombstone. What I did see was piles of stones. One pile of stone, another pile of stone. And on his cave, they had a big one. Pile of stones. And as this rabbi, Yemenite rabbi, took me to there. I said, well, why is it? Why don't you have a matzevah? He says, well, we're keeping the way of the times of the Torah. We have our early customs from the times of the early times when the Jews lived in Eretz Yisrael. Thousands of people, this is how they used to bury. I says, well, this is our custom. This is how you bury. You just put a pile of stones. That's what you do. And then he told me, well, did you never ask yourself why, when you come to the tomb, you leave a stone? That's something left from those times. Because they do it till today. And that's why Rabbi, the great rabbi, had a big pile. So many people, everyone leaves a stone. He had a big, big, big mountain of stones. And according to the, you know, according to the stone, the amount of stones on the on the area, you know, if someone visited there, they visit there.
I apologize.
Okay, that's it.
What did they use to